NDP, which guides the work of government and is overseen by the parliament, says, and I quote, SOEs are central to advancing national objectives through providing economic and social infrastructure. If this is done in an equitable and cost-effective way, SOEs can contribute to both economic growth and overcoming social inequality. To quickly recap, government recapitalized South African Airways by 10 billion to redeem maturing debt and provide working capital, while SAA guarantee exposure decreased by 6 billion. The airline's guarantee facilities were not reduced and remained at 19.1 billion. We also note that we made it clear that without rigorous reform to their business model and an intensive strengthening of governance in all facets of their operations, the long-term survival of the institution will be at risk. We wish to assure South Africans that we are on track with our NDP objectives, and also that the turnaround of SAA is on track. So with these few words, let's engage and let's have a free, open, and robust discussion. I thank you. Please feel free, this is our meeting. But give us information, don't hide information from us. We are only going to be effective if we have information. Thank you very much. Sorry for that interruption, it was necessary. The Honourable Deputy Minister has been summoned to Cabinet. Today is Cabinet Day. But out of courtesy, he decided to come and show his face. But before he goes there, we will leave him to go forward. This matter is also a matter before Cabinet. So he has to go and make input there. But before we release him, shall we allow him to just give remarks set a tone for the main in our discussion.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. May I again make this apology because we are fresh. The Minister is not around. He is also trying to make a case for the country globally. What I wanted to say, Chair, is that in some of the remarks you made, there's a lot of alignment with regard to the department's intention. That is, we accept the obligation of securing the resources for a purpose that is developing. What you are going to come across is that when the presentation takes place, it will actually demonstrate, one, that immediately the entity has got serious financial challenges and it's got serious corporate governance challenges, it's got serious operational model challenges and urgent need to deal with those so that at least the patient continues to breathe, so that if you give medicine, the medicine is for a purpose. It is our view that unless those three things are sorted out, talking about pumping whatever, then talking about any idea going forward will not make sense. Where we are sitting, the presentation will show that there was a long-term turnaround strategy which had to be reviewed, and gaps were identified. An independent test of that has actually been done, because at times you can present what you feel is good, but when you talk on scientific issues like this, you need credible institutions to test the sense of your strategy. That has been done. Gaps have been identified, checklisted. Now there's a clear turnaround strategy which, with regard to my information at my disposal, it seems to be receiving positive response, especially in the financial sector, in terms of its sensibility of its logic. What I hope to discover is that 17, 18, we'll be talking about a net loss of 5.7 billion. 18, 19, we'll be also talking about a net loss of about 5 billion. And 19, 18, we'll be talking about a net loss of about 2 billion. Analysis has been done thoroughly. All what we are seeing in 2021 is the point where, after these losses, the entity would actually be breaking what we call even. And the path towards that has been tested scientifically. We believe that it's going to work, and the committee can actually do its own exercise. We're very open to that. That is what we're saying, Chair. But having said all that, we need to be able to move on the path from here to there. For us to move from here to there, naturally we're not going to be euphemistic. Money is going to be needed. Now, we believe in this strategy, but we've also have looked at various options, Chair. We are saying from now until 2021, an amount of about, by March, the 9.2 billion would have matured as a debt, which must be paid to the families. Over and above that, a 12 billion would be required. All that together makes about 21 billion. With that in place, we are very positive that we are going to be the only part that will help us break even in 2021. Another option has been, which has been funded around, about throwing this entity away. Our calculation, sir, is that the implications are no less than 60 billion compared to what we are raising now. But we accept, sir, that we will have to accept accountability to Parliament in as far as this. We had a tough day in the public account yesterday, and we accepted that it was working. We're going to have another day here. We are open to be interrogated because we have got nothing to hide, and we are committed. I can say, Chair, the kind of board that is in place, I wouldn't say it's a perfect board, but generally they are equal to the task. Of course, with the government working with us. My closing remark is that the minister took a decision that, having interacted with the new board, that there's a need for an oversight for us. Where for about 6 months, Treasury and them, we worked together, holding each other's hand. And we, during this period, what we are trying to do is to make sure that an optimum capital structure is in place, the funding model is in place. And we also want to make sure that by the end of the 6 months, beyond this oversight period, the program going forward is the program that will sustain. In other words, at the end of 6 months, we want to make sure that this machinery is on a firm and a sound rail towards 2021. Those are the few remarks I would make, but the detail is better presented by them. And I want to thank you, Chef, for your understanding. I'm running here.
Thank you so much, Honorable Deputy Minister. We really appreciate your respect for this meeting, but also your setting the tone for this robust engagement that is about to take place. Thank you. And you have reassured us that you have a board that is up to the challenge. I'm sure the board by now has been made aware of what the expectation is. They say when people understand the expectation, they are able to deliver. When they understand their expectation. So this, we are looking forward to this. And we appreciate the innovation of establishing a relationship with SAA whereby you will be walking and talking the talk, walking the walk with them, talking the talk with them for the next 6 months. And then, just like any newborn child, then allow them, they should be able to walk on their own and deliver on the strategic objective of their mandate. Thank you very much. You are released.
I just wondered whether there's no question to the Deputy Minister before we leave.
But I'm chairing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm asking.
Oh, you're asking me?
Yes.
Okay. You see, we are a democratic parliament as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't pretend I don't know that. Honourable members, do you have questions that you'd like to send to the Minister? And you must remember that the other meeting is waiting for the Minister. All right. Can you please indicate by show of hands how many people would like to ask questions for the minister? Honorable member, Shopee Sole, honorable member.
Sure.
There's so many. As long as you are short and to the point. Agreed?
One, two.
Agreed. Honorable member, Imam. Honorable member. Honourable member, this. So I have how many hands? Four. Three. Four.
Just go
ahead. Honourable member. Paulson. All right, in that order. And please promise, especially that you will be short and to the point. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Bringing my hearing. I just want to give advice that the most important thing in this oversight thing is to take our recommendations as committee very seriously. Check our recommendations, the recommendations of the portfolio commission, the recommendations of SCOPA and the recommendation of the Auditor General, and make sure that there are no repeat recommendations on the same issue that will take us to that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, for your presentation. One of the challenges I think I have is this, Deputy Minister, in order to assist SAA, and we all appreciate and understand and accept they've got challenges, and in order for them to make a turnaround, there are some challenges that need to be addressed. One of them, which is not within their mandate, I would imagine, is the issue, I think it falls on the CAA, that aviation authority or whatever, the issuing of routes and licenses and whatever it is, which is also having a massive negative impact on the success of SAA. So I'd like to know whether you're going to be engaging them together with SAA, because that's one of them that's going to hamper success in SAA. That's the first thing. The second thing is this, which is very, very important. We know they've got a challenge. And one of the reasons why success is basically delayed or postponed is because of loans and loans and loans. Is there not another way that we can actually do it so that they can now function from a position of strength, rather putting pressure on them in terms of the loan which they have to pay back together with interest? Is there not a way? If we're talking about a bailout, let it be a bailout that they don't have to now continue to be able to go to payload because they have to concentrate on that. Given the challenges that they face, which you can't eradicate over this very short space of time. So that's the other turn. Deputy Minister, one of the reasons in my view we're having this problem and this debate again and again and again, and I don't understand why, there is a perception out there that if you are a public entity, if you are a private entity, you run it like a business, you can make a lot of profit. But when it's government, you can't make money. And it should not be like that, because it should also be run as a business, and also they should be able to make money so that it's a success. Because what is happening is many, many people are pushing to privatize and sell the airline. We'll continue selling. We don't need to do that. We can turn this thing around. So I'd leave on those issues if you can. And finally, the issues of where there are evergreen contracts we've been told that are running for 30, 40 years and the impact that it has on us. Thank you.
Thank you. I know you tried.
But then, may I have the first question? Because remember, okay. Here for the presentation, we have enough time to engage, rigorously engage with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister, there are many state-owned airlines and they function quite successfully, and one of the reasons why they are successful is because they are listed on their respective stock exchanges, and you've just stated the lack of skills within the airlines, and I think one of the ways of getting good skills, because listed companies, and can still be listed, you attack better skills, the best skills actually. And you could actually turn SAA around as many other state-owned airlines that are also listed on stock exchanges and attracting really good skills and improving the profit margins of airlines. So I think, you know, although I agree with the Honourable Sheikh that we should not privatize the airline, that still doesn't prevent us from investing in the airline. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And the last one is Honorable Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say to the Deputy Minister before he goes that it's great to see him 2 days in a row. It's been a pleasure. Sorry you're leaving. That's all I wanted to say.
Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thank you. I think I can't repeat what she said. Implementing recommendations of the AG scope of score is a non-negotiable. The advantage some of us have, before we got this side, we've been in Parliament. So that's the advantage. So you can easily put yourself in the seat. They know my attitude with regards to that. That this is not a place of emotion, this is a place of dealing with issues. Because this is where our house. No, that one, we don't have to repeat. The issue of aviation, that's a transport department issue, but I think what you're calling for is, because aviation and FAA are inseparable. For instance, if you look at our fiscal framework, when we speak about the low-hanging fruits, one of the elements there is a single transport regulator. The reason we're dealing about that, we don't want that there be institutions that are going to defend the player at the same time. We want a single regulator so that there's a fair space for movement between the port and the inlet and so on, be it on air, and the seamlessness between the air, the road, and the rail. But for that to happen, you need a single what you call regulator. You don't have a particular institution like Transnet, which is a booth, a regulator, and what to call. So in other words, that issue of alignment is going to be very, very important. The other critical issue which has been raised by yourself, Honorable Imam, is a very big one. The critical challenge we're faced with is to ensure that the state-owned entities do perform. And for that to happen, the undisputable approach is where a government and the state-owned enterprise, particularly the board, converge within a common framework of corporate governance. In other words, balance between the two things, I keep on raising this. The state, with regard to accountability and control, and the duty of the board to perform effectively and in an interdisciplinary way. If we don't find a balance between these two, we don't need to have state-owned enterprises. Because conventionally, state-owned enterprises are put in place because they are generally expected to run in a manner non-conventional as compared to the day-to-day department of government. In other words, they must be self-supportive. They must actually increase the value of government instead of what to call of decreasing. Now, for that to happen, there's a balance between that entrepreneurial and effective performance, which is required between that and the accountability to society. And those two, I can give an example. ESCOM in the early 2000s was one of the top best performing entities in the world, in top four in the world. If you look at how it applied, there was a convergence between government. In other words, politicians, board, executives, all shared a common value with regard to the principles of proper government. In other words, it was predictability. One of the issues that I want to raise is that it's also my submission that in South Africa, we don't run much short of scale, but we need an environment that is predictable. If I'm a politician, I say to the board, this is how we're going to work. They must believe me, because I stand by what I've said. Because I don't say this, and the following day I do something else, because they are not sure what to do. And then they withhold their energy as far as that is concerned. To remember Paulson, I think our attitude is that this is my last point. If you look, there's a framework for review of SOEs. It speaks about a list of options, costing developmental mandates, private sector participation, and then disposing non-core assets, and a number of, and a guarantee. What is the first, should you guarantee, give guarantee for operations or guarantee for capital, what to call investment and so on. That there are already papers in a number of areas. Actually, I guess some of the questions that will be answered are questions that we are raising. All what we're saying is that the attitude of government is that review state-owned enterprises in a manner that plays them to serve the purpose of adding value to government, not reducing value.
Thank you so much. I can see honourable members are very happy with your responses. I'm sure, yes. Shall we allow the honourable deputy minister to now go and attend to this other very important meeting?
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now for the panel.
Shall we proceed with the business of the session? I know we just made opening remarks and then we announced the minister to speak. May I request if there are any apologies? Honourable members, do you accept the apologies?
Yes, ma'am.
some people are double booked here. So I would be happy if you really prioritize. Okay, no, that's fine. Well, shall we then move on to item number 3, which is presentation by FAA? But maybe we should get, we should do introductions. Are you happy with that, or are we going to sing our time?
Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, we met as you said, in November. We are here today, and we have had 6 months of baptism of fire as the board, but I must comment that the challenges are there, they are huge. But we have a board and an executive that I believe, given time, they would be equal to the task. When we started in November, Madam Chair, Honorable Chair, we found a situation where there was a problem with the board, there was a problem between the board and the executive. And there were gremlins between the board and the shareholder. I'm pleased to say today, Madam Chair, the Honorable Chair, and members of the committee, that we have a board that is coherent. We have a board that works extremely well with the shareholder. An example of that, Madam Chair, you are working well with the shareholder if the shareholder phones you as the chairperson of the organization at 3:20 in the morning, which happened 3 nights ago. That's a sign that things are working extremely well in that direction. Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, we have a liquidity and solvency issue which the Deputy Minister has explained clearly. He has also touched on, as a result of this issue, both Treasury and the Board of SAA, we agreed that we should have an oversight committee that is going to apply its mind and come up with strategies as to how to deal with this liquidity issue, and also to make sure that there is a capital structure in SAA that is going to be that will be able to underpin, undergird, and make sure that the strategy that we have has a chance of success. The committee has its own chance of reference, and I will request the CEO in his presentation just to touch on what is this oversight committee and what is cut out for it as work to be achieved. Mr. Kingston, sitting on my right, is the co-chairperson of that structure together with the Deputy Minister, and a lot of work is coming out of that committee. One of the things that we discovered when we joined SAA was that there was a serious level of leadership instability. I will again ask the Chief Executive to touch on the work that is being done to fill in the vacancies that were there, and also to deal with the areas where there were acting people for more than 4 years, which is a formula for disaster in any organization. We are on top of that now. We have a clear plan, and the Chief Executive is going to share that with the committee. We also found a control environment that was totally dysfunctional. We are now getting on top of that, and we can assure the committee that there's going to be significant improvement in that area, particularly in the space of supply chain management, finance, and revenue management. Because without that, there is no reason there for an organization to exist. The supply chain management at South African Airways, because of the PSMA and all the regulatory environment that affect this, is necessary, but at times, when you are at the ICU and you need to be quite nimble in making decisions and implementing those decisions, can easily stop you from doing things. Yesterday, we were asked the question, why should it take you 6 months to make a decision on an issue, a problem that you have identified? And part of the problem is the SCM process that we find in that meeting. And we are doing the best we can to make sure that we modernize it, we make sure that it facilitates and enhances our opportunity to be able to make decisions fast and implement those decisions fast. And on that, we are working with the Treasurer. Honorable Chairperson, having said all that, let's just make sure that we understand that the core airline operations are solid. We still continue to have our safety record that is unchallengeable. The Chief Executive will explain to us in his presentation this morning that the turnaround strategy that we have, we spent a long time, more than 4 months, looking at it and making sure that we stress test it to make sure that it will be able to deliver the results that we wanted to deliver. We do have a solid airline. The commercial side has been looked into quite seriously. You might have observed that some of the flights have been cancelled, but we are making sure that those that fly, they make money. And the Chief Executive will share with you the green shoots that we see coming out of that offer. Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, we found an organizational culture at South African Airways where it was quite clear that there are people who believe that South African Airways owe them a living. And part of the turnaround strategy is to deal with that issue. Productivity of the people, productivity of the individual, and even productivity of our technology is getting serious attention, because if the culture doesn't change, it doesn't really matter what kind of strategy you put in place. We know that the only differentiator in any business is its people, because technology is available and anybody can go and buy the technology. But if the people, their attitude, their productivity are low, you can have the best of strategies, but it won't work. And the Chief Executive is engaging with all levels of people at South African Airways and is going to share that with you. Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much for the lovely atmosphere that we find in here, Mr. Lee.
I'll try and control that.
We really enjoy it. I'll hand over to the Chief Executive to take us through his presentation.
Just a reminder, Honorable Members, that the same rules that apply in the House apply here. So I know that we'll go on and talk because you need to order. Am I right? Thank you very much.
Yes, sorry.
Thank you. Then request the CEO to do the presentation. The bottom line, Chair, of everything that you do, whatever that you do, that you do within the parameters of the law. And then our message that you should carry with is that we're looking for a balance between your performance and compliance. Easy. Thank you so much. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will be covering the topics highlighted, especially briefly in terms of the state of the airline in the market, update on the turnaround implementation, strategic options. We look at the risk, and then we look at some of the aspects of the audit findings that we have from the current report that came from the AG, and I will touch a little bit on the oversight forum. Chair, I will take my presentation, and if I'm running too fast, then I will ask to be slowed down. Well, the chair president has already indicated that when we met, we did indicate that we are going to take a hard look at the strategy. When I got to FAA, the lenders came with the extension of the loan maturity date. The consortium of lenders, had asked that we sign on the strategy, and that was existing. And I asked that they give us leeway until end of January to be able to assess the strategy and be able to confirm back to them that we are happy with the long-term turnaround strategy. I'll walk the committee through some of our findings, which led us to after reviewing the strategy, fine-tuning it, and coming up with the plan that we have today. We felt, Chair, that it's important to reflect on the history of stability, leadership stability at FAA, where we reflect a continuum of the various CEOs that have had, been engaged at different points in time, but also the impact on the graph where you see the red bars, they indicate the debt levels. The red bar is looking at the debt maturing within 1 year. The dark gray bar indicates the amount of debt that matured within 1 to 5 years, as well as the much more light gray chart talks to debt maturing longer than 5 years. And the line graph talks about the profitability. The committee will see that just before 2012 or at the 2012, then FAA started making serious losses, and you could see the debt increasing significantly because you did not make money. You would have to borrow to sustain operations unless the shareholder injects money into the business. So we're talking about the history of very marginal performance and long, long period of time of loss making. It's important that we highlight this aspect of the history, both for the board as well as for South Africans, so that we all understand the extent of the challenge that we're dealing with. Because if you're dealing with the history of this sport, we have to accept that it's going to take time to actually build a new platform for success. We need to be aggressive in implementing decisions, but it's important to look at the history and say this is what we're dealing with, so that we were able to be focused on how we execute the strategy moving forward. This graph indicates the history of the turnaround strategy at FAA. The one that on top, the first one, that said LTTS 2013, the committee would see that around about 2013, the board decided to put together the long-term strategy, which we call LTTS 2013. That strategy indicated that in 3 years' time, about 2016, the airline will break even. Then, what happened is the opposite. The graph that is a zigzag at the moment, that moves, is a graph that moves from 2013 right to 2017. It's a result. You have a strategy that says the graph will go up, the actions are different, they go down. This talks about the gap in strategy execution. When you look at the strategy, look at the document, you can't force the strategies that were put in place, they look sound. But the execution was this one. Then the board in 2017 looked at the situation at the end of this point 2017, yes, look at the situation and say, the situation is untenable. Let's put together the turnaround strategy with the intention that by 2018, the losses will be about 2.8 billion rand, moving from that 5 billion, 5.6 of the previous year, 2016, 2017. Then the dotted graph shows that the opposite was there. So instead of moving up from 5.6 to 2.8, this is what we're talking about. It gets to about 5.6. It goes the opposite direction. Again, what is the cost in ability as a triple strategy? When you look at the strategy developed in 2017, even though, as I speak, there are aspects of it which you feel could have been looked at slightly differently, but that's not the only reason why it's like that. So inability to execute strategy. So when we look at the situation and say we're building a new turnaround strategy, which is going to come in the later slide in the presentation, it's important to consider all the efforts of 3-year turnaround strategy that have not been successful. And it comes down to one common denominator, the inability to execute the strategy. And when you look at what the chairman has articulated, our own preliminary diagnosis, other than the issues of solvency and liquidity, which highly impacted last year's inability to execute the strategy, the bigger part of it is the capacity in FAA to implement strategy, the skill set, the processes. That's what is the big issue. So we are quite aware of what needs to be done to make sure that this time around we are able to get past the implementation framework. So skills, capability, processes, really focusing on the market is what needs to be done. So these are the reasons why there has been rather poor implementation of the strategy. Lack of quality integrated focus, limited commercial and business skills, so which is all the things I've highlighted. I will keep it at high level. These are the issues that we're diagnosed as the reason why two attempts, the chairman talked about a cohesive board cohesion. The board is not cohesive. It's not going to support strategy implementation. The interplay between the board and the shareholder, everybody must face the same direction in order to deal with the strategy implementation. If we don't face the same direction, it's going to be very difficult to execute. And this is some of the elements which are refreshing. When you look at the market statistics, taking a granted FAA, what has happened, FAA is a group, knowing fully well that we've got FAA master brand, the full service carrier, as well as Mango, you'll see in the domestic market that the share of FAA has reduced significantly. This is 2013 to 2018 over that period of time. But you could see that Mango has grown within the group, even though at an overall level the group has shrunk. This talks to the trend in the market that domestically there is a much more growth in the low-cost service airline. People are wanting to get low-cost flights and as against full service carriers. So that's where the market is growing. And the big part of it, you see Surf Air have come in to take part of the share of the market. So the trend is common even on the regional side. We have lost share. Again, on the international side, we have lost share largely to the Gulf airlines. We talk about losing share, knowing fully well that the market, the aviation, the air travel market is growing, Jefferson. When the market is growing, it's not a part of the feedback where to win, somebody must lose, which means that FAA still has a chance to grow if we get our acts together. It's very, very different when the market stops growing, then to win, somebody must lose. Therefore, we talk about the strength of the different brands. FAA brand is very strong. There's an opportunity to grow in a sustainable way. It's not a case of saying because there are other airlines, the market is growing, that is the LCCs in South Africa are taking space, it means probably mean we should not grow. We should be able to grow and fight for ourselves. And we talk about how we are organized as an airline. When we look at the turnaround strategy, some of the major challenges that we're facing is liquidity challenges. So
there's a reduction in inflows in terms of revenue. You have got restricted cash with difficulties with raising funds, because if your balance sheet is weak, you have got a negative equity. Therefore, it's very difficult to attract further debt. You're also aware that you are clear that each business has got maximum debt carrying capacity. Where you are able to sell it both debt, that is the principal amount of interest. The moment you go back that kind of ceiling, then obviously you break the business model. And it is our view that SAA has reached that line of optimal debt capacity in the current framework. So solutions to support SAA has to be a lot more a mixed model. It can't just be debt on the other, debt becomes burdensome. So some of the things that we're working on is discussion with shareholders. The chairman spoke about our joint oversight forum that is co-chaired by the Deputy Finance Minister and the Chair of Finance at SAA, Mr. Kingston. We're looking at how government guarantees could also continue to support as they've been allocated to us. Liquidity improvement and management, really focusing on generating revenue, making sure that our initiatives will fly, both that are profitable, so that you are able to generate revenue, get your break-even point at a gross profit as well as the full cost allocation, including dealing with the underlying structural cost structure at SAA. So whether it's in supply chain or how we are organized as a business, but obviously things they've locked their cash in Angola, Zimbabwe and Nigeria. Government capitalized SAA for 10 billion rand. 7.5 of that money went to pay debt, and 2.5 was used over the period of time to support working capital requirements. So that's how that money has come through. When South Africans talk about bailing out SAA, it is correct that it is a bailout. But we are not experiencing that cash in a manner that supports operations moving forward, because what we have done is to pay the debt that has been incurred. So it's important to highlight that a company needs to be funded to have the right debt equity structure. Raising guarantees alone, you're actually saying, the shareholder is saying, I give you a paper so that you can go and borrow money. However, once the money, if the money you're borrowing is beyond what the company can carry, even the business plan, it breaks the business plan, so you have no chance to succeed. And it doesn't mean when you're borrowed, you must not execute correctly. There is still a responsibility to execute that. We want to highlight this, that alone is not the answer to SAA in the business model that we have put together. As I had indicated earlier on, in terms of some of the key assumptions that we look at, we look here to say, what were the assumptions for the turnaround plan that was developed last year, which hasn't worked, and what are the reasons for it not to work today, hence we developed a new one. There were key decisions that were to be made. $900 million capital budget to support transformation of the aircraft, the purchase of two aircraft, 13 billion in cap, part of it, the in the circles, the black circle means it's done, when it has done, it is partially achieved. Going concern status was achieved, but I'm talking about the top right, top left quadrant. When you look at the key initiatives that were supposed to have been implemented in order to sustain the turnaround strategy, we have to add the five wide body aircraft that were flying between Cape Town and Johannesburg. These are the aircraft that are not geared for 2 hour travel distances. They are inefficient. You cannot operate them in a short distance, short run distances like we have. Those could not be exited. The narrow body aircraft that were supposed to be maintained, they were exited largely because of the going concern challenges of SAA, where the board could not extend contracts longer than 6 months. In Varadu, we had to face that situation where lessors were not going to extend contract leases for 6 months. They want a much more longer term engagement. Procurement benefits we could not get because of the going concern constraints and not extending contracts for longer than 6 months. Those were foregone. Those were baked into the plan. I'm explaining, Chair, the difference between
the last year turnaround that was supposed to take us to a loss of 2.8, which went south. So these are some of the criticisms there. Central Africa Roads rationalization, that was done, and you can see the benefits of pulling out of some of the routes in Central Africa in terms of the cost into the business. You see a huge improvement in that regard. There were also other elements in the market which were as a negative. Increased competitor activity, growth in the low cost, the Johannesburg Hub bypass, though it was significantly being bypassed, still Gulf Airlines extracting traffic from the public region, which normally would come to Johannesburg and be carried by SAA. So from a commercial point of view, those are some of the things we saw in the market. Of course, Cape Town reached a critical mass to start saying, well, we are not in Cape Town in terms of international, but Cape Town is much more an effective station to town to operate from on the industrial level. There were also issues on the terms of the major commodity. It was focused on that oil would peak at $55 a barrel in 2023. Last year it peaked, by the time we got to SAA, it was already teetering around about $60 a barrel, and today it's sitting at about over $32 a barrel. So massive impact in terms of the PML, which cost. So it was more of a perfect storm, but part of the reasons why we were not able to execute in the site. So, given this context, Chair, we have had to make key decisions so that we are able to arrest the decline of the business. One of the key decisions we have had to do is with capacity and redistribution in the domestic market. When we analyzed SAA, we realized that all the domestic routes were making losses at a gross profit level. To do this, you need to therefore rebalance the market in terms of capacity. A lot of the market was more on the low cost and we've got Mango. That's why we moved fleet capacity to Mango, because Mango, almost every flight you fly is profitable, but also that's where the big demand is. And then we kept SAA focusing on the full service carrier proposition with the right balance of fleet capacity. So route optimization, adjusting the schedule to focus on business and premium economy travel for SAA, what's Mango is picking up the balance of the low cost frequencies. In terms of the focusing on staff costs, we are engaging with labor. We have labor forum meetings almost every month, meeting with different labor unions at SAA, as well as a joint forum with labor to talk about how we deal with some of the challenges in SAA. So we are focusing a lot on productivity improvement in certain parts of the labor force so that we can get more output out of the people we have, over and above just looking at pure ratios of numbers. In terms of the organization, we have put in a change hub, which is the single biggest effort to show that we are going to drive change. It's a dedicated group of people. Peter Davis is the chief research officer, leads that hub. We have got projects, a number of projects which involve many people at SAA in different levels, where we are implementing some of the key initiatives rigorously and covering a number of areas. So we have to build a very strong and commercial organization at SAA. We have developed an operating model approved by the board. We are going through now an organizational design process where we build a fit for the future airline. We want to make sure that the restructure we do it once and make sure that it will last longer. You don't continue to restructure every 3 years, so that you create stability within the organization. In terms of supply, focusing on really looking at every cost item, from leases, from procurement processes, making sure that we can draw back a lot of the benefits from supply chain processes, and making sure that we can improve our own relationship with the major finance institutions to be able to rebuild in confidence in the business side, in the turnaround strategy. We know that when we do capacity management, it's painful to the customers, it's painful to South Africans, because whereas you would fly every 15 minutes between Johannesburg and Cape Town, now it's not the case anymore. Or every 30 minutes between Johannesburg and Cape Town, now it's not the same anymore. The challenge is that we have had to rebalance supply and demand to make sure that we're the prospect of success in terms of every flight flying profitable. When I was saying to the chair that we are not making profit, also we are making losses at the gross profit level, what that means is that if I take a flight, an aircraft to fly from Johannesburg to Cape Town, you take the cost of ownership of that aircraft, you amortize it, allocate it by flight and by route. You take the cost of flight deck crew, the cost of cabin crew, fuel, navigation and landing rights, the food that you serve on the aircraft and charge it against revenue. The revenue you collect doesn't cover those costs, let alone the head office. So this is what we're talking about. That's why we're trying to take drastic decision in the market to actually make sure that the hole doesn't get bigger and bigger. Does it make everybody happy? Who wants to fly every 30 minutes, every 15 minutes? No. Would you want to make everyone fly every 30 minutes and 15 minutes? Yes, people can do that profitably. So this is where you make trade-offs in terms of the business decision. So what we're seeing are some of the early green shoots of what we've done. The biggest focus was increasing revenue, improve the yield in terms of margin. Where you see on the far right, the weight fee is green. It means there's an improvement compared to last year as a result of our own decision. Where is red, for example, the number of passengers have come down at the FAA alone, largely because we've got less aircraft. Some of the aircraft have gone to Mango, but when you look at the Mango portfolio, you're showing a big increase as well. So it does balance out. So what this means, sir, is that the strategy we're implementing as part of the tactics, what we're going through, the pain we're going through, is showing signs of success based on the plans that we have. It's important that we continue to implement this strategy while adjusting the routes so that the network so that it's less painful. So optimizing schedules, listening a lot more to the customers, how do you rebalance the schedule within a very constrained environment, is the kind of engagement that we continue to do in order to make sure we can succeed. And domestic, same success, we go to international. In regional, again, we're seeing the same thing. That's where we have the Central Africa route rationalization. In the international, which is the last flight, we haven't done much. The London second flight, we only pulled it out of the frequency of the schedule on the 18th of April. We'll see its results we'll give it May, by end June, we'll see the results of the London flight. We're confident that when you run two frequencies to London, and the second frequency costs you the annum in excess of 360 million there, it doesn't make sense to continue to fly two frequencies. These are the realities that when you look at the business, you have to take hard decisions, and then this is what we're doing. And we have pulled out of the second frequency, we have stabilized the slot, we haven't sold it, which means we've got ambitions to go back to London and increase our capacity. But we have to do it in a much more profitable way. We have to find the best network connection for us to do this. So the summary is that we took the decisions to rationalize capacity in the market. What you have seen, the results are talking to the intentions that we plan to do. We also know that customers are not happy with the fact that it's a restricted capacity. We also understand that we have to do a lot more to engage and listen to customers so that we can optimize the network within a constrained environment within which we operate. The Deputy Minister did indicate in terms of the strategy that we have had to retune. He talked to a break-even point of 2021, where we are focusing on driving to a break-even point in terms of business performance. There are a number of assumptions that are based here, this strategy is based on. It's based on the oil price not reaching $70 a barrel. We also know now that it has done that, it's just reached the $70 a barrel. We have planned that because $70 a barrel, at that point, it makes it feasible to start fracking, and we also understand that the U.S. will be open to fracking once it hits $70 a barrel. However, some of the issues that are more in the environment in the Middle East have triggered the increase in oil price. So these are some of the assumptions we have put in place. What I need to also say, Chair, is that there are assumptions about commodity, but also there are assumptions around revenue growth. It is important to mention, SAA is not a monopoly. We are in an open market. we're a global organization. We've got agents who sell our seed 3 to 6 months in advance, and they sell it when they have confidence that this airline will be there in the next 6 months. Now, each time there are negative news that are coming out about FAA, my next biggest task is to go out globally and talk to the agent to say, continue to book on us because we are okay, we'll be fine. Now, I raise this particular point because South Africans at times raise issues about FAA. There's a very little appreciation of the impact it has on the long-term sustainability of FAA. Because even if we do the strategy, if the sentiment is negative about FAA consistently, about its going concern, its future, the business plan is compromised. Because people will start to say, I don't do FAA because I'm not sure they are going to be there. It's a very important point that I need to raise sharply, that even with the best execution of the strategy, if we are not consistent about building the FAA plan together as South Africans, the good intentions of may have unintended consequences for the brand and our future digital strategy. At the high level, Chair, having looked at FAA completely, we have said that we want to build a transform FAA to a commercially viable organization whilst defending the safety record. Was one of the key things we found that commercially FAA is very, very weak in execution. The market sets the tone for any business. The business must respond to the market trends and demands. FAA's ability to respond to market changes is very, very limited, largely due to limited capacity to execute commercially. So it's important, the notion of flying for profit, we make it very, very clear while taking into account any needs for social requirements and so on. But the language of knowing why a business to be commercially viable and financially sustainable, it's important that as a culture, we build it into our DNA, which means when you buy things, you buy them cost effectively. When you put commercial deals in the market, you put the best deals that are in good position. So this is where we want to push the culture, the operating model with support this objective. We want to push a lot more on production efficiency. When we operate, we do that. We operate efficiently, which means business process analysis, business process improvement, a lot of automation and digitization of processes. A lot of our processes are old. We need to revamp them and modernize. We want to win in the domestic market, in the regional. We want to be a regional player of substance, which means that's where we see growth in the continent. The growth rate in Africa are projected to be 6% to 2036 by IATA, which means that we have the opportunity to improve our performance in the continent. Internationally, we are also clear that we are going to be a focused player. It doesn't help to aspire to be big when actually you don't have the economics of the big islands. We want to be very focused, leading with customer experience, making sure that customers prefer FAA ahead of competition. That talks improving overall service offering as part of the offer. Customer experience is very, very important for us. We want to build aviation skills at FAA because a lot of the skills at FAA have been taken by competitors locally and globally. We have to invest in developing skills. The whole area that was raised of the aviation policy for the state, shaping it. When we talk about the open skies today, it's not about FAA alone. It's about developing opportunities for domestic air travel market. If there is no degree of balancing the policy congruency, it means the development of air travel market will be curtailed in South Africa. So opportunities for a person from Guyana to fly to Johannesburg might be limited. But if you have got a degree of balancing of the policy domestically, you start to see the thinner routes being developed, not just by FAA, but all the domestic players in the market. So it's not just an FAA issue. It's a domestic air travel market development. Because if all the opportunities are five-formed without the policy congruency, then the ability to grow new routes in the domestic market will be limited. The strengthening of the balance sheet, that's the work that the Oversight Committee is doing. Overall, Chair, this is
this is the blueprint that come up with the things we are going to do. Underpinning this is governance, it's business processes, it's dealing with aging issues, the issues that have been raised historically, all the reports that have been before the board, we are going to have to deal with them. Those we take them as must do in terms of making sure we have a sustainable business. At a high level, I'm not going to read all the details. We have to pull together the method of doing this. The first phase is arrest. We have to arrest the decline. When you are in a pre-fall, we have to take drastic decisions to make sure we can arrest the decline. That's why we made decisions around capacity management in the domestic, in the domestic market, as well as the regional market. We have to put together core activities that are going to make sure that we can improve the efficiency. That's why we are focusing on training supply chain people who are going to help us transform our supply chain so that we can get better economics out of the airline. And we are focusing on training skills at a very good level. Our focus is on getting people working part of transformation and business transformation in where they come from. That's one of the criteria for which we're is a very important area to focus, because FAA needs people who have the experience to actually make sure we can succeed. So this is based on change, stabilize, grow, and these are interwoven. They are not necessarily in chronological order. So these are some of the activities that we want to make sure we can drive digital engagement, the app. There was feedback yesterday that our app is flat. We know this, we have to improve it so that we can actually improve the customer engagement. Well, let's go. So I've already highlighted these are key strategies on the international. What are we going to do on the international market? What are we going to do in the domestic? So a big focus in domestic market is segmentation, making sure that FAA becomes a full service carrier, what Mango takes the battle for, takes on the battle of the supply of seats to the low cost carrier market. On the regional aspect, we have to look strongly on the West Africa growth, how we address that. So we've got plans to address that as part of our strategy. We have to look at partnerships between East and West and creating the right hub strategy within the continent. Alliances are going to be very key to actually make sure we succeed. And all these things are articulated in detail in the corporate plan of the organization. Again, on the international side, we believe that there is an opportunity to review the network, especially with regards to South America and Asia Pacific, who are underrepresented in Asia Pacific in terms of our presence. We go to Hong Kong today. We have to find the right entry point to actually get optimum benefit in Asia Pacific as part of our strategy. So there's a lot that we have looked through, but this is what part of it is modeling what works, because we want to take on routes that are going to be profitable for us. This is the key criteria that we're focusing on. This slide talks to overall organization that we are covering. IT, governance, and IT transformation becomes important. SLA has a lot of technology, but it's not integrated. We have to pull it together so that it can help us serve customers better. We're going to focus on customer experience. Distribution is important. Only 15% of our distribution comes from the digital platform. The other airlines are the other way around. That's where you get better economics. You don't pay too much on distribution costs. So there's a lot of work to do in a number of areas. That's why we need skills. That's why we have to be very, very robust in making decisions as quick as we can. What are the risks? What are the risks to the plan? We speak about the risk. One of the key risks is around getting people on the job. Most of the ESCO has been acting people. So the strategy that we're adopting to get skills into SAA, as things stand today, it's hard to attract people into SAA, people who are in comfortable jobs, who are strong. The SAA brand is not selling. So they have to do more in the interview to convince them around contribution to the country, the future of SAA. It's not like you can put an advert there and get someone to leave the job and say, I want to work at SAA for all sorts of reasons. So the strategy that we're adopting is a three-pronged strategy. Continue to recruit people who can come with a lot of experience to join SAA.
in the interim appoint interim executive as well as retired CFO, retired chief leader to come in and close the gap while we're searching for the right candidate. The third area is to go for short-term support from consulting or service providers with what skills, whether it's in revenue management, data science, or distribution, to close the gap and interrupt the intervention. So three-pronged approach. Interim executives, long-term search, short-term assignments from companies who can come in and interrupt the intervention because there's pressure to strategy and you need skills. These are the roles that we have been searching for. So the CIO, for example, starting in May, we've got the interim head of supply chain, so critical role coming from treasury, started in April. We've got this is progress. We are bringing skills. We are not just praising each other. There's no skill. Where we are doing, we are making major progress because we know there's urgency to act at SAA. This is the same mapping of the skills profile that we want to. I'm not going to go through the details. So there are conditions for success of the turnaround. One is the continuous, the going concern. Data resources to balance sheet restructuring. If you are not able to restructure the volume of balance sheet, then you don't get the going concern. Then it's a risk to the plan. Close collaboration between the shoulder and the board. The joint oversight forum has been created. It closes that gap to make sure that there is close collaboration. Good governance and board responsiveness. This is one of the key areas that the board is working on. Executive and organizational capacity and skills. I've already addressed that. This is what we're addressing urgently. Tough as it is to get skills in, but it's a key area of focus. If we don't get the skills in, that will undermine the execution of the strategy. Dependency, successful manpower, productivity and oversight, organizational culture and agreement with labor. Labor is important to be brought on board in terms of understanding what needs to be done, that trade-offs and sacrifices will have to be made at SAA. And we are spending a lot of time at the bilateral level as well as at the forum level with labor, talking about our own challenges, looking for ideas in terms of what are some of their thoughts around solving some of the challenges that have to do with labor. So as we are listening genuinely, because if they have got great ideas, so we will take those ideas. Speed and agility of contract revisions and renegotiations, putting things on tender, making sure we can actually get benefits of supply chain in a structured way, funding of the state turnaround plan, and get extension beyond 2019. So these are the, if these things do not happen, then we will have challenges in executing the turnaround. These are some of the main risks that the macroeconomic drivers for them in terms of the financial plan. We spoke about oil price movement, but that's the market. That's what we need to look at. What could happen if the oil price shoots to $100 a barrel? So we have to continue to model that and see the impact. There are a number of risks to the plan. Some of the risks are within the purview of the shareholder, the board, and the executive. But others are much more in the macroeconomic environment. But that's business. That's what the macroeconomic environment drivers are the risk that every business, every airline faces. But the ones that are within the purview of the shareholder, the board, and the executive are uniquely SAA, and these are the ones that are within our control that we can act together to address. In terms of the audit findings, there were two big ticket items. In terms of the irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. By far, if I look at the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the big ticket items were around disassigned, were around claims by our customers when, for example, a new flight cost that is functioning, then those they would be claims against us. Again, there would be interest payments. Interest charges because of late payment, and these also reflect interest charges due to late payment reflect the state of the company. If we extend payment terms beyond the supply date due to financial security of SAA, some of the suppliers start charging interest because they're also exposed in terms of their own banking system. And these come through as issues that the audit finds that they were progressed and wasteful, but actually you are constrained. Your situation lends you to that kind of situation. The beta funds were being dropped from suppliers. That would have been the cause of the claim against SMS. The issues around claims by customers in terms of in-flight entertainment, it's a product of the aircraft that's old, so technology is old. We are doing everything to do pre-test before we can depart the flight. But if you have an old technology, it's bound to break. So we're having plans around how we refresh the in-flight entertainment system so that we lower the impact on the on terms of the claims. In terms of the irregular expenditure, when you have 6 months constraint in contracts, the system cannot work fast enough in a massive organization. If you are going to redo the contract every 6 months, invariably there are going to be contracts that are out of scope. But also generally the contract management system at SAA historically has not been good. The most fundamental issue is that we need to improve contract management system, making sure that we bring proper governance and control into the system. Key issues that we also raise around property, plant and equipment. I'm going to keep them at high level, Chair, and perhaps take questions. On the where the old age said FA did not adequately review useful life or physical values of property, aircraft, equipment in accordance to IS 16. I make this example that FAA has been revaluing the assets, the aircraft, holistically as an asset. What AG has pointed in terms of the IS 16 is that we need to componentize the aircraft because there are parts of the aircraft that are exchangeable. Some of them will be newer. So if you use overall aircraft, you may be understating this value. So these are the kind of things that we are working with AG now to componentize the aircraft valuation in terms of its value. In terms of rotables are parts that are rotating. They are not consumable in terms of spares. These are spares. Some spares are consumable, others are rotable, which means it gets used, brought back, it gets reconditioned, it can still go back to the aircraft. So managing the interplay between the stock, the warehouse, the installation at the workshop, and what is in the plane is what we need to manage. We've got three systems. We've got SAP, we've got NANIS, we've got AMOS. Part of the challenge is that AMOS and SAP haven't been reconciled appropriately. These are some of the gaps that we have in terms of both inventory management as well as the rotables. I've already spoken to irregular expenditure and goodwill and wasteful expenditure. The overall check, all these things are in action. We're putting external support for finance to look at logistics. We've done, as we speak today, at SAT, there are physical audits of parts, and I guess weekly update where we are in terms of progress to make sure that we can reconcile the two systems, AMOS as well as SAT, so that when the audits are done, we find that we need both efforts in this area. I keep this at high level, Chair. The oversight committee, its sole purpose is to deal with two major area issues, and then the third one being more monitoring. One is to work, is to a joint action between the shareholder and the board to deal with immediately critical challenges facing FAA. How do we continue to operate? How do we find instruments of working capital funding for FAA? But the most important one, given that the plan is clear that by 2021, at the break-even, at the date where FA should be able to cover its own costs and break-even into profitability. There is a need to finance the path to profitability. Finding the right and mix of funding instruments is the big piece of work that needs to be done, and the Deputy Finance Minister already allocated it. Therefore, it needs a joint action between the shareholder and the board to define those instruments. The quantum is clear, what is needed, but what has to be clarified is what is the means of funding instruments that are going to support FAA to a break-even point. Those are the two primary reasons for the oversight committee. Of course, creating the environment for execution of the strategy, looking at policy framework, looking at fast paper approvals of decision to actually enable where the section 54 approval for changing the rules or the first material framework, creating a headroom for FAA to operate with the flexibility within the governance framework,
that's what is managed by oversight committee. The territory target. Of course, the committee has to monitor us if we are doing the things that we said we want to do in terms of execution of strategy. So that's the extent of the strategy. We have had to revise the strategy that was developed because of the number of these things that were supposed to happen did not happen, and things that ought not to have happened happened. Therefore, to rebase the strategy, we needed to work with the board to actually put together a plan that we feel strongly that is a strong plan, given the current market context. Of course, there are happens to all types and other aspects of the macroeconomic future. That's where I am, Chair.
Thank you so much, CEO, for the insightful progress report from the last time when we met in terms of the strategy implementation. I think what came up strong is that after analysis of that strategy, that strategy was reviewed. So sitting here, we received a reviewed strategy on the turnaround of the SAA. I will now open the floor for honorable members to interrogate the reviewed strategy and the progress made since the last time we met. Thank you very much. Honorable Member Austin, Honorable Member Imam, Honorable Member Lee, Honourable Member Snukwanyane, Honourable Member McLaughlin, and Honourable Member Shopestole, and Honourable Member Maswangani, in that order. But then, remember, we're not getting a report, a presentation from SAA for the first time, just for the program again. So, you call it in line with our resolution that we will be monitoring them closely, what our interest is a turnaround so that we can see where taxpayer money is spent and also the compliance involved. So, I'm just going to give each member two questions. Yes. Yes, remember there's another presentation coming. Two questions to remember, that if indeed you really think you need to give any more time, shall we agree that you will then submit written questions
Okay. Via
the secretary, and then we will then forward those to SAA, and SAA will then give us written responses. Agreed?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much. So number one, you come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I get the sense that right now what we're doing with SAA is we are financing the losses and efficiencies. And really, although there may be room for expansion, I think getting those inefficiencies addressed is very important. And you've mentioned that Cape Town has reached a critical mass. So I'd like to know, are you communicating with them to expand, and how far back in terms of expansion? And then once again, I have to raise this. I mean, if you look at Telkom, semi-privatized, well managed, adheres to high levels of corporate governance, financially sound, and a clear strategic vision. And I think what I'm getting a sense here that there is a clear strategic vision coming from you, CEO. And I'd just like to know, in terms of that's the one part you're getting right, because a clear strategic vision. But in terms of financing it, in terms of getting the right skills, I'm going to raise this again. Is there consideration
consideration only to list the airline. Last question is, we've got SAA and SAA Express. Two state-owned airlines. Two of everything. Duplication. Would it not help address that skill, that critical skills that you listed? Because surely whatever skills you require, they require. So there's this duplication. Should we not look at also merging the two here to one? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Only two.
Thank you, Chair. I have about 37 questions, but my democratic right is being mentioned. One of the questions I have is, my understanding is this, that you're going to need something in the region of about 12 billion rand before you start breaking even in 2021. And remember, you're getting this money not in the form of a bailout that we are calling it, you're getting a loan, you're paying interest and all that, similar to what I posed to the Deputy Minister. Now, if this was not a loan, will money alone, if given to you tomorrow, be able to turn this airline in a year into profitability? Or is it other factors that are contributing that may not be still able to give you the success in a much shorter space of time? Because whilst you're needing this money, remember this money is going to fund losses again, because you're still going to experience losses in the next 2 years. So I think you understand me. I wanted to know, and my understanding is that all airlines will have the same cost factor if you're flying a particular route. If you're flying Cape Town to Durban, whether it's that way, whether it's Mango, whether it's that. The cost is going to be exactly the same in terms of fuel. Mango itself, if you take Mango on its own, is it running at a profitable airline at this point in time? If you take away the challenges that SAA is putting on to them. I'll have to stop there, unfortunately, for now. Thank you.
I can see the displeasure on your face, but yeah. We'll look at whether we can accommodate a second round. Next.
I think it's really on. Yeah. Thank you. I'm not sure who should answer this because Madam Chair, there's a presentation by Taban, which is a very interesting presentation too. And there, on the second to last page, I think it is, there's reference to the whole of state aviation policy. And then, Wiani, you mentioned the open sky policy. But just, in the domestic market, what non-domestic airlines operate? I can't think of any in the domestic market. And so I'm not sure, I just need a bit of clarity. Maybe Taban can talk about the whole state of aviation, because I think he's got a huge amount of experience in aviation and can guide us there. Then just in terms of the assertion which you very correctly make, Riani, about the limit to how much debt any business can carry, in this instance SAA. So currently you're carrying 9.2 billion rand worth of debt. You need another 12 billion in working capital to carry you through to 2021. Clearly that's unsustainable. It can't be loans. It has to be some kind of equity injection. But in that assessment, there's no provision, or is there, maybe I'm wrong, for renewing your fleet? What are the capital requirements that may come to play there? I know that most of them are on lease, and so you're going to probably carry on leasing them. But what I'm trying to point out is that there's a requirement to service debt, but if you want to renew your fleet and you're going to lease them, then those lease payments, in a sense, are debt payments of a different kind, but they're still debt payments. So where is that line? Because it's quite critical, because whilst Taban does kind of make an assertion early in the presentation about the possibility of just simply shutting down, and we heard the Deputy Minister say that the estimated cost of shutting down would be 60 billion, I don't see any real assessment of that as an option. It's been discounted as an option, as I understand it, and the option is to keep the airline in the air. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I have two questions. In terms of the government guarantees, I know that government guarantees don't necessarily mean that you pay out all the time, but from experience that SAA has had to be rescued so much in the past, how do you see this government, or rather the cash injection from trade, what are the implications for this? Do you see this being a continuous challenge, or do you see this as having a certain limit, because it looks like SAA, like others, is entitled to government guarantees, but I'm just specifically speaking to this one because SAA has had to be rescued more than once, and what is your take on the future of this government, application of these government guarantees? And then, I'm trying to choose which one. Perhaps on this slide on the limited management capacity and the appointments, I see that in two instances, you have indicated that you have interim resource starting in May and so on. What does this mean? Does it mean that you are headhunting, or you just can't find suitable people? And who are these people that are going to be acting? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Sukwanyane.
Next.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, all my life before I came to Parliament, I was in the accounting profession. I am trying to think of any business which has sold assets and not deposited money in its account and survived. You know, because I'm trying to think what are the main causes of SAE. I think the main cause is that you once sold aircraft and you don't know where the money went. And I just want to say it should not happen again. I'm trying to think very hard. I always know that if you sell an asset, you must still have an asset in the form of cash. But if you sell assets and the money disappears, you will end up with this. That is why we're cutting our heads like this. But I'm happy with that you have kept your promise of keeping us posted, and I wish you the best. But you must not privatize.
Of course, that did not come from the presentation. Next.
Don't judge me, Chairperson. You're taking away my right, my freedom of expression all the time. Don't amend my presence. Leave it to them.
Next.
I think I was next, Madam Chair. Attempting as it is to ask all the obvious questions, I'll try and restrict myself. If I can refer to slide 29, it reads like a litany of sins. It must be hugely embarrassing for you to come and have to sit here and tell us all this. Did not adequately review, could not be verified, could not be established, did not assess, were not supported, could not be verified, cost recognized and incorrect credit. what was going on. How does this happen in an organization like yours? And what action, what consequence management has now been put in place for this? We can't carry on like this. 40 million rand in squandered money. Wakefulham fruitless expenditure is money squandered. That's produced nothing. When you owe so much, you cannot afford to squander 40 million rand. Please give us some assurance on this here. And then on your last slide on this sheet, 32, the oversight forum. The second heading says composition, but it only tells us who the chairperson and the deputy chairperson will be. Who are the rest of the persons who are going to be in this oversight forum? Can we be on that oversight forum? Anything to stop us being there? What will the composition be? Because I only see two people listed here, and I don't know whether that's the whole forum. But perhaps you could just unpack that one a bit for us too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your question. Honourable Member Matano.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome the presentation. The question is about the agencies that sell tickets on behalf of the SAA. As to, I remember some of them used to keep the money, and there were serious restrictions as to how that money comes back to South Africa, including Angola and the like. Well, what's the position like now in regard to the agreement of SAA and the agencies to bring the money to the SAA coffers? Because at some stage there was a lot of money out there. I can't give the figure, but can we get the indication where are we in that regard with the agencies? The second question is the franchise agreement, or whatever we call it, between the SAA and the Elling. It looks like this agreement works in the benefit of Elling. Elling is ever expanding the domestic market, and the SAA market is shrinking. There are provinces where SAA, of course, can't even go, like Mpumalanga and so on. And the long-term consequences, I don't know what it means. How does this agreement work in the best advantage of the SAA? Because if we are losing the domestic market to SAA and we are losing the international market to the Gulf Airlines, which I think more of them are coming, Qatar, Iran, now we have Etihad, and they are very aggressive in their strategy. In Africa, Ethiopia is coming very strong, Rwanda is emerging. It means both domestically and internationally we are going to be in trouble. Where are we going to be, Chairperson and CEO, in 2021? We support whatever turnaround, though there have been more than five turnaround strategies. And we believe that this one is going to work in the best interest of South Africans. Because I, for one, vehemently disagree with the liberalization of SAA that it should be sold. It's not always the case that everything that is run by private sector is very efficient. Why is Steinhoff collapsing? Why are accounting firms having serious problems today? Big accounting firms. So let's debate that maybe on another platform. I for one propagate that the SAA should remain, and we should do everything in our power to sustain it with all the challenges which are there. But my questions are in the main on the SAA Air Link agreement and the agencies, chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Member Ma.
So then, and then after the quick question.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Let also echo the sentiment of my colleagues as we appreciate the update. I must say that you are giving us hope, and ours is to continue to support your efforts as Parliament. I also would like to appreciate the fact that on slide 23, for instance, within a short space of time, you have made some quite strategic appointments, and we'd like you to encourage you to continue to strengthen the management capacity of the airline. My two questions, yes, before the two questions, maybe I should also echo what Honorable Mafragan is saying on the issue of privatizing in Canada. That cannot be facilitated. I repeat that because more and more is being heard of such a story. My two questions. Last time we raised the issue of unproductive and unstrategic offices of SAA. The example of the Miami office. We don't know where else SAA has offices where it's not operating. If you could give us an update on that, because we think that is part of arresting the unnecessary expenditure. Because it also involves paying staff who are of North South Africa. So if we could get an update on that. The second part, of my question is just very concretely, what amount of money would make SAA operational on a day-to-day basis and going forward? I raise this question because these bailouts are not very helpful. They only force you to deal with what you have on a daily basis. They limit you in terms of projecting forward and planning ahead. So it would be very interesting to know. I think it's honorable. If we were to put a bag of money here, and that would really make you stand up and run, what would that be? Because that would help perhaps also to think ahead as probably as this committee and the department itself. Not to say that there is money, but at least there must be some idea of what we're talking about.
Okay, thank you so much, Honorable Quip. I have one question, and thereafter, honourable members, I would request that, and also to our guests, that we then, after these questions, then allow Mr. Thabang Motsoaledi, who is a sector specialist that we called, so that he can empower us to be able to do effective and efficient oversight over the work, the FAA's work. But we then said that we don't want to get this information alone. Just also for your information on how he is advising us. And then from there, I mean, written advice as you go, you use what would be the best interest of the organization. And also would use what would be the best interest of our work to push FAA to go to New Heights. Okay, my question is on slide 28. Please provide exact timelines and elaborate on details underpinning the following. Capacitating the SCM department. Now, what is remaining there? You're not putting timelines. We just want to know by when, because I know we have time constraints also in this turnaround. And undertaking refresher training for the rest of the business, the timeline, consequence, management, where appropriate, timeline. So I'm just about timeline, so that you know any plan without that is not time bound. Is not bound to implementation. All right, shall we then allow Mr. Thabang to present to us? Thank you very much for responding positively to our invite. And in the meantime, and again, also as the committee, because we don't have the expert knowledge, so we'd like to depend on the expert knowledge of the expertise so that we deal with matters in a very effective and efficient way and make an impact in our life.
So, before I the questions that were asked for me to be answered after, or what was
that
the question?
That's why I consulted with you, because normally you would have to really leave the questions, right? We will then allow for this quick input by Mr. Suri. Thank you so much, and we really value your time.
Well, thank you very much for a very, very kind invitation.
Can you hear me now? Yes. Let me speak by extending my gratitude to the Honourable Chair for the invitation to come back again. It's an honour indeed for me to be back here and share my thoughts on this very complex but very critical subject. When I was here on the 17th of December, I shared with you my perspectives on this industry, on SAE, using historical experience, because I was group strategy chief for Transfer in 1996, when we decided to push SAE out into the Department of Public Enterprises. It was then when we also brought in the now infamous Coleman Andrews for wrong reasons. My approach then
Honourable Chair, was to give you a comprehensive historical perspective. And I hope I achieved that. Of where the airline started, how the operating context historically has been liberalizing from the late 70s in the US to where we are today. And the decisions that we took beginning in 1996, which have had material and continuous impact on the day. Honorable Shoffert talked about, you know, we have so many airlines flying in the country. Indeed we do. So my presentation today is a recap of that earlier presentation. And I think the value that will come out of the value that you'll realize and gain will be measured by how you take my presentation of 17 November and contrast it with what you've heard today. Today you have the chairman, you also have the CEO. Now the question is, from the perspective of that November presentation, when you tick the boxes, where have they ticked the boxes? And are you satisfied that they've ticked the boxes correctly? And I'm not trying to say that what I presented in November is a standard that has to be used to deal with restructuring of this entity. But using my experience, I was giving you what I would do and what should be done. So this presentation then will have that approach. What was said, what I said then, rather, what was then said here. So let's start, because, and I'm going to restrict my approach from my strength and experience, which is really, you know, validation and evaluation of organizational strategies in, you know, that determine where organizations should be in dynamic operating context. I'm not going to talk about the recapitalization strategy and the requirements thereof. That is the province of the board and treasury, taking into account what they're trying to achieve. So, the relevant question then that I posed for myself was, can SAA be made fit for purpose? Remember, I talked about that then. And can the LPTC deliver the intended outcomes? That is the restriction that I have in terms of my experience. I deal with these issues. And I'll try to give you, you know, my best opinion, you know. Now, a very quick review of the last presentation. There was a reference to the fact that, you know, I suggested that SAA should be put into a rescue. And I think we should read that carefully. I said options. These are options. The first option that I said was available is to put SAA into a business rescue and then restructure aggressively. That would have liberated the CEO from a number of obligations, for instance, on the funding question of the pilots and many other things, and all the labor questions. Then I made the second option, which was pursue an aggressive drive for efficiency optimization at all levels, while concurrently developing a detailed answer to the question, what exactly must be done to make SAA fit for purpose in all respects? And I'm saying this means that define clear purpose and marketplace for the low cost and low long haul operations. Essentially, this leaves only two possibilities. SAA for long haul operations and Mango for the low cost operations. Now, this opinion that I'm making here has been validated by other studies. For instance, the latest study by Bain confirms exactly what I'm saying. The market is only available to low cost and long haul, which is SAA, if something drastic is done on SAA for the long haul operations. There are serious indications to this conclusion. Because the state has three or four assets, as it were. The express airline, and then the Mango, and then there's the international experience and what is happening in the market globally is that the low-cost operators are pushing express operators out of business in many areas. So that has serious implications. And the same conclusion is made by they, who are currently engaged by the Department of Public Enterprises. So I'm not alone on this position. And then I said develop a strategy and implementation plans to organize and reposition SAAF urgently to meet the new market reality. In other words, what I'm saying is that to make it fit for purpose. And this is exactly what we are at today. We're trying to understand what SAA intends to do to make itself fit for purpose. And as I go through this presentation, cast your mind back to what the chairman said and to what the CEO said, and keep on seeing whether there are touch points there that speak to these issues that are raised. And you'll find that there is some correspondence if you look at it. And then draw plans to optimize Mango operations and capability to lead in the LCC market. There is no doubt that Mango is profitable. There was a question, I think, a little earlier, if my points are right, raised by Honorable Shaikh about Mango. It is a profitable operation. The potential for its dominate is very high. And therefore what needs to be done, I'm using the word very carefully, optimize its capability. Because if you don't do that, competition will accelerate. So optimize it. And that's exactly what the CEO said. Now, to continue with my conclusions then in November, then I said develop an appropriate extra fit plan and human resource strategy. That is exactly what they're trying to do now, I believe, from what they've said. You see, in the airline business, it is not just the route that you say may offer an opportunity. It is the type of equipment that you put onto that route in order to, execute that opportunity. If you put the wrong equipment, you're going to burn your money. And SAA knows that very well. And it is a serious constraint on what it can do. You know what is happening to competition. Competition is really gearing up to making sure that they are correctly equipped to compete. And they respond very fast. I'll come back to this question of response, which has been raised several times, not only here, but even yesterday. It was raised quite significantly. If you are not able to respond quickly to strategic decisions or changes, you are out of business. And at this point, maybe I should just make the following rider. Airlines operate in a hyper-competitive environment. That's number one, globally. Number two, they run on very thin margins, globally. The third implication then, the implication of all of that is that from a policy point of view, as a government, you must ensure that your policy optimizes or creates an environment in which the management of that airline will thrive and survive. That's the first thing. And the second thing, you have to ensure that the board that you appoint to oversee this kind of entity is correct in terms of competencies and skills. The profile must be correct. The third thing, you have to make sure that it is run by highly competent people. You cannot get people who are not competent to run an airline. It is a very complex environment. It is a system
that it is important to talk about this at this point. And highlighted the system within the bigger system, which is the state. Within the system, there are many factors, small and big, that interact to shape the destiny of this entity. You must know all of these factors. You must be able to understand the materiality of each one of them, small or big, because the small one can have an impact such that it actually torpedoes the whole organization. Therefore, in the systems view, a complex and dynamic system, that's what an airline is, and any other business. And then I'm saying develop a funding framework and plan. These are the things that I said in November. Draw a comprehensive and detailed execution plan with time frames and clear intended outcomes. You know, I think this issue has just been emphasized as well by the Honorable Chair in the question that was raised. Then decide on the level and type of capitalization required. And I said here, you know, unless you do these things, to make a decision on recapitalization when you're not clear about all these questions will be really irresponsible. And the question that we have to ask at this point in time is, are you satisfied with what you had from the chairman and from the CEO in terms of how they see this? Are you satisfied that even this model that I gave you or the framework that I gave you in November, they've answered all those questions? And then I said all of the work must be completed within 10 weeks. It is very, very interesting that I spoke to you on the 17th, they were here on, I believe, 27th, and I wasn't even aware they were going to be here on the 27th. And during the time when I was here, the CEO was you know, a new CEO was being installed, with the team that came with him. And I believe when I was making that presentation, he was watching it too on that day. So what I'm saying is that the time they took to do the review of the previous strategic turnaround plan falls within the 10 weeks that I'm talking about. It's a very interesting coincidence, you know? They took exactly that time. Because otherwise it could not have made any sense. Now, during that time, a number of things have taken place, you know, following my presentation. A new board, as I said, has been appointed. The shareholder has made a decision that SAA will not be put into business rescue, but it shall be. They've taken actually the second option that I've talked about, aggressively restructure and reorganize and put this entity into a state where then further decisions may be taken. You cannot decide at this point in time to say let's list this in order to attract partners. None will be interested. You have to make the entity attractive for listing in the first place. When it has become attractive for listing, then you can decide whether to list or not, and why you do so. The history of Telco is exactly the same history that SAA is going through now. I was very involved in that history. Telco went through difficult times before, until a decision was taken to really change the whole idea and bring in equity partners and take it on the trajectory that it is on now. It had turbulent times, just like this. So my suggestion really, you know, Honorable Chair, is let's park that issue of listing aside. It is not, I'm not saying forget about it, but the time is not right. What we should ask is the time that they have projected on their time frames reasonable enough to take us to 2019, 2020, or 21, when then maybe we can start thinking about this. The biggest question that we have, and I shall talk about that as we move on, is the following. How credible is this turnaround strategy? Can it be
implemented quickly enough and successfully? These are the fundamental questions that we should concern ourselves with. What has happened is that a high-level forum has been established between Treasury and SAA, which is fantastic, because then it shows concern by the shareholder to participate in that. I'll speak more about this interaction. And I might say that since then, of course, you know, the CEO has asked me to advise him on a specific area of policy and regulatory environment, you know, on a short-term basis, and I should complete that, you know, shortly. Now, let's go back to what I said at the time. Key drivers for successful strategy execution. And I want you to please think about this as you evaluate what they have said. A diagnosis of the operational and structural weaknesses must be accurately made and comprehensively understood. If you recall what the chairman said, is that the LTTS has been reviewed and stress tested. What I said in November has been complemented, by Bain. Bain says exactly the same thing too. So there is no question about diagnosis. The diagnosis is correct. Comprehensively analyzed and identified key challenges and constraints in the operating context. Now, if you go back to the presentation by the CEO, please go through that and identify exactly what he's saying about what must be done. I think it's another slide where he's going from arrest, change, stabilize, and grow. That slide really indicates the extent to which they have gone granular in identifying what must be done. Secure alignment at all critical levels in the organization, we've talked about that. And then the critical part here, point five, in-source an experienced team with executive authority to prepare an implementation plan with timelines and execute aggressively under very tight independent shareholder representative supervision and oversight. My experience of these sizes and types of restructuring exercises, and I've just retired from one company, quite big, where this is a very complex company, and that is engineering and engineering and systems development. We had to undergo a very serious restructuring. You need to make sure that you have technical knowledge to oversee the restructuring. The structure that is in place, with Treasury, its focus, as the CEO has indicated, is on recapitalization, what must be done and how. You need project management to ensure that fast decisions are taken. I'll talk more about this, because this is one of the key things that we're doing. And I've talked about the airline business and etc. Now, the important thing about somebody, one honourable member, asked about why is SAA losing money so much? It is very, very simple. In the airline business, you operate and manage your route on a profit and loss basis. It is simple enough. If you don't do that, you're out of business. The road freighters do that. The guys that transport freight from Johannesburg, Durban, Cape Town, etc. Each trip or route is managed on a profit and loss basis. They understand that. Why are we not doing it? Which now will bring us to the next question that I'll raise later on. If you allow routes to run at a loss for more than 6 or 7 years, a particular route, a number of routes, there are serious questions to ask about the management behind the wheel at those times. I leave it to you to make up your mind about that. The chief executive showed you a slide about the turnover of leadership in the past 15 years, from 2012. Now, if you ask me, about what not to do with a complex organization that requires steady management
That slide speaks to all of it. I can't remember, but that's slide number 4 in the CEO's presentation. Please look at that slide very carefully. It can be used as an international case study. What not to do. The sad thing is that we watched all of this happen right in front of our eyes. We watched it happen, and it happened. It's not that we don't know. What the CEO has done, he just put it together in a manner that makes sense. But this should not happen anywhere in the world. In fact, we have to teach this at university. This is fantastic as a lesson. Now, let's understand, I'll just pick 2 slides to try to answer the question. What underlies the risk management weakness? So the statement that I've made, and which has been also confirmed by Dane, is that SAA is deeply unprofitable in both the South African domestic market and routes to the sub-Saharan Africa, the Africa region, due to cost inflation and overcapacity in terms of equipment. Go back to the CEO's presentation. You remember? That's exactly what he said. Net margins, I'm quoting in the bullet points that follow, is just the extent of that damage. Now, this is an important slide. If you look at the losses that have been made, and I picked up about 6 or 7 losses, loss-making routes, and we total them on an annualized basis. They total 643 million for 2015, 900 million for 2016, 1.3 billion for 2017. Now, I can't remember who asked that question, but there is your answer. It is right there. If you add others that I've not added here, you'll shed a tear. Then you understand exactly why this is. And I'm not talking about 2015 or beginning of 2015. I'm going back to 2012 and 10. It has been the same story. Yesterday I heard somebody ask a question. Ask a question that I always travel on SAA and it is always full from Joburg or Durban, Cape Town. Why are you then not making money when SAA is full? It is a good question, but out of context. Because you see, she was referring to one route. There are many routes. If you take profits from one route and spread them across the others, where in fact you cannot do or make any impact, you are swimming in the dead. You're going to sink. So the reason why we are where we are now is because government has been very generous to keep on pumping money into it. At Transnet, we did exactly the same thing. We're generous at Transnet, one of my colleagues who used to work at Treasury is right here, the board member. Their job was to find money from the profitable entities and then distribute it across the unprofitable ones. So at the time when SAA was within the Transnet stable, you didn't have to think and worry as a CEO of Transnet where the money is going to come from. You put the budget, and that budget would be approved. There would be questions of cost, stresses and ideas, but you'll get what you want. And then you go into what you call individual projects, by Boeing here, by Airbus here, by whatever. Those are what's called ego projects. They happen. They happen since the 80s, 85. When I got there in 1984, my director was the chief executive, an engineer now, traditionally in Transnet. All the technically minded departments were headed by engineers. And they all were competing against each other. What is my pet project that I can pursue? I'm telling you facts. I know it because I was there. And they did that. So
there's nothing magic about the losses. We have seen them before. You know. But importantly, what we're trying to do in 1996 was to change that paradigm. You cannot just expect to get cash. You have to treat commercially the issue that was raised by the CEO on the profit-mindedness of the organization. Now, when you walk into SAA, you know, about 4 months ago, you'd find that, you know, that paradigm which is different. The question that you have to ask yourself, given what the CEO has said, are those things changing? Are they touching the right buttons in terms of what needs to be done? And I think the presentation that they made is quite comprehensive and answers in many ways all the issues that they raised. Now, this first bullet point is scary. And the question that I'm asking at the bottom of the slide is, why did we allow all of this to happen? And nothing was done. I have no answer. Now, the key objectives of the LPTS have been, you know, ably presented. I'll skip that. The question that you asked me, I'm answering that question at the bottom of this slide. You know, am I comfortable with the design of the LPTS and the direction that has been taken? I'm quite comfortable with that. I have no reason whatsoever to doubt that it can be done. But I have serious conditions, and I'm raising them now in these two slides, which I think for me right now, for the purpose of this meeting, are very key slides. The key to success will depend heavily on the following issues: the capacity and capability, and more critically, the mandate to lead and execute. That is very important. A new and experienced team has just been sourced in, and there's a slide that showed you, you know, different capacities and levels of this new experienced team that has been sourced in. Transformation of this nature and magnitude is very disruptive. SAA is not a small organization, over 30 billion run. It is extremely disruptive. Now, when you do a turnaround that is disruptive in an environment where you operate on very thin margins, and where disruptions can actually disturb your processes, you can actually capsize the ship. How you manage it is absolutely critical. You need leadership at all levels, especially the key levels. The question of route management and profitability is key. The question of turnaround in terms of maintenance of aircraft is key. Before even that aircraft flies, it has to be maintained properly. And remember, in the airline business, all those maintenances are done according to certain protocols. And it must comply with certain legislative requirements and international protocols by the dominant players in this field, which is the, you know, FAA and CAA, and then, of course, overall globally, the International Civil Aviation Organization. It is absolutely important. The parts that you put in that aircraft on a repair have to be documented. And you must do a reverse engineering to find out when was the part installed, who signed it off, where was it sourced, was that supplier qualified according to the SAA, FAA, or CAA. If not, you are exposed to a whole lot of things. So it's a very, very controlled environment. I'm saying at point three, EXCO must have latitude to make decisions on the go, but with a very keen eye on the agreed outcomes. My observation is that EXCO is a bit tight on this. Understandably so, because of the history of where we come from. There's a leash on them, and I'm saying this is a threat to this structure. We need to loosen up those controls. and the rationale for that is simple. We have a new court that governs that they have high level of credibility in it. So why don't we just allow that to happen? Let's just allow that to happen. So let EXCO have the responsibility, the mandate, the latitude to do what they have to do. The question of the solution required is how to put a quick response restructuring oversight authority. That will, in many organizations, that is already true. How do you do that? We now have an oversight committee, but as I said, it is more focused on the, you know, recapitalization challenge. You need to have something else that does project management. And that can work with the CEO to make sure that decisions are made, you know, on behalf of the shareholder to execute. The issue of whether or not to put a particular aircraft on a route or to stop that route is a core business of the airline. And that is solely the responsibility of EXCO. I don't see the reason why this responsibility must be shared with others outside who have no understanding about the competitive forces. There are a number of decisions now that ought to have been taken, which were delayed, and they cost money. Remember, when you delay to remove an aircraft, that aircraft will still continue flight, and as it flies, it burns money. Okay? Decisions ought to have been taken about a couple of months ago. They were delayed. And this is not right. And a number of other delays, you know, that hamper decision making. So I'm talking in slide 6 about, you know, the significance of the materiality framework, you know, by Treasury. That of course was set up, you know, with a good intention in mind. But we need to find another way of making sure that that responsibility is shifted now to the board with proper, you know, oversight. Point B, a lot of discussion has revolved around point B, the state of consciousness for a coordinated air transport policy framework. Now, this is so important, and I would like to spend a minute on it. We have a disadvantage in this business that we are located at the tip of the continent. We don't have opportunity for east-west connecting traffic, north-south. We only have south-north. If you look at Ethiopian Airlines, for instance, they have a geographical advantage where they do east-west, north and south. So the hub and spoke methodology is possible there. We hardly have any in this area. Now, the issue of tourism for South Africa, is very important. Empirical studies and evidence show that it is one pillar of development that is bringing, that is employing most people at all levels of skills, and making a very huge impact on the GDP. The question that we have to ask is, are we sure that we are coordinating policy to ensure that all the operators that promote tourism are doing it within a consistency of a policy framework? That's what we call about the whole of state. And there's a paper that has been prepared, the CEO will be submitting that. The area of regulatory environment is another area that's exactly where I'm advising the CEO. So, Honorable Chair, the overall, you know, response that I can give to you is that, one, there is no question about the credibility of the LTTS as a change plan. It has been verified. There is no question about the credibility of the leadership that has now been put in place, and more are still going to be put in place to make sure that they lead and drive this change. The question that has to be answered is whether we're creating an environment for this team to succeed. That is the biggest question. And that answer comes and must come from the state. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much for the presentation, Mr. Mutuhi.
Honorable members, we thought this information would top up any other information that we have and empower us and enable us to do effective and efficient oversight over the expenditure of SAA and value for money for the money allocated to SAA by the National Treasury. So indeed it was a comprehensive and insightful presentation. I will then now, I'm not going to allow you to ask questions to Mr. Moore. Mutuhi, because that's additional information so that to expand our knowledge base on these issues and engage in a quality manner that will add value in our work but also add value to SAA. I will then allow SAA to respond to the questions raised.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to address the questions as they were posed. The first question that was asked was around the Cape Town reaching critical mass. The question from the honorable member was, are there any discussions happening between SAA and Western Cape? The answer is yes, there are discussions we're having with Westgro around Cape Town and what SAA could be. They continue to engage us, saying the national flag carrier should be flying off Cape Town. The discussions are at a very early stage and we're exploring the business cases for being able to respond. So those conversations are ongoing in terms of the Western Cape. Westco is facilitating the traffic travel into Cape Town. The second question that was asked was whether listing SAA would not be an option. The reference was made to Telkom. I think if we look at the history of the evolution of Telkom, move from being a government department to be corporatized, from there there was a strategic equity partner that came in to modernize the business and ultimately it ended up going to listing. What the oversight committee is doing is looking at all the instruments of funding, how we fund SAA, and that's the sole purpose. So the mix of funding mechanism will come out of the work that the oversight committee is doing. But if you look at Telkom as a benchmark, I think the honorable members would know what it takes to get to a certain kind of capability and profile to do certain things. It's a long journey. The other question that was posed was two airlines of government, SAA Express, if you combine the two, would it not address the skills issue? The answer is no, because both airlines are ailing as it stands today, both SAA Express and SAA, shortage of skills. What would be strategic out of possible airline FAA, SAA Express integration is access to different gauge of aircraft that SAA Express has that would help us to service thin routes. And even routes that are not that thin, for example, Port Elizabeth and East London. When you look at the morning flights, there's not enough capacity to carry a 120-seater aircraft, but if you have a 90-seater aircraft, you might get better load factors and run profitable. So the mix of the metal access to different capability would help us to provide a better service without sacrifice to the airline. So this is where the strategic value of an outfit like SAA Express, when it's fit for the future, would add value. It's purely the access to metal, access to be able to service the roads. The question was, will money alone, if you can get all the money, would you turn around SAA within a year? Money is an important lever, the basis of which this strategy will survive or not survive. If we don't have funding, if you don't have the ability to have finance working capital, and I'm not talking debt only, I'm talking about the right capital structure.
there will be no turnaround strategy. Even if we're to have the money tomorrow, there are much more structural challenges that we need to address at SAA. Modernizing the business, building a stronger brand, building a culture of commercial focus, doing the right thing at the right time. These things take time. When you re-optimize the route network, it takes 18 to 24 months to get a route to break even. Let's suppose we refine the network, we open new routes because we have to grow into the future. So this is the timeline we are talking about. So when you talk about a three-year plan, even if I get all the money now, the market, I have to go and fight in the market, put the right skills, the commercial logic, the skills, the people, the processes, get to restructure the supply chain, take out the cost. It's a long route. It's not just about money, but none of the things we want to do will be feasible and possible without the money. Money is the base platform for us to move with the turnaround. The follow-up question was, Mango is profitable, same aircraft. Why is SA not profitable, same aircraft, perhaps same route? It's again around the commercial delivery. If you have got very strong commercial people who understand how to respond to the market, who are able to do the right customer engagement, but most importantly, who are very, very thorough in cost management, taking out cost. Everything you buy it at the lowest cost possible. So that's the culture. That's the culture that's at Mango. But also the way people are incentivized at Mango. There's a mixed model of incentives. So there's a variable incentive based on profitability, there's a baseline. So if you don't achieve success, if you're not making your profit, then you know you've lost. So there's an incentive to push to succeed across all levels. So that's the culture we're talking about. But most important, also when you run a low-cost airline, your efficiency in turning around the aircraft, it also adds up. So it's not just the metal, it's how you run the business. It's the culture, it's the practice, it's how you source. It's really making sure that less burden in the organization to succeed. The other question was asked around the aviation policy. What non-South African airlines are flying in the domestic market? I think it was a response to the point I was raising to say it's not just about SA, it's about the domestic travel market being growing. The members will know that SA has held the Johannesburg hub strategy. Now, if you have a hub strategy with a balanced international traffic allocation, traffic rights allocation, first you have got a reasonable fair share of the international market because there is a balance. It's not just open to everyone, but not just for SA, any other player who's domestic in South Africa. That's the one part, how the international market routes are managed. That's one. The second important thing, which I think is much more real, is the fact that when the Johannesburg hub is undermined, so most of the international are siphoning traffic from Durban, from Cape Town. And I know that there will be regional ambitions as part of the country to say we want to have a stronger Durban, stronger Cape Town, which is what is happening. When Turkish Qatar Emirates go straight to Durban, it deprives the local airlines to do the last leg. They land in Joburg and they further hop to Durban. This is the reality we face. But if you are able to aggregate in the landing point and use the domestic airlines to do the last leg, that is mutual growth without sacrifice. Therefore, you can expand, you can be able to go for thin routes. So this is the kind of analysis that needs to be done from a policy point of view, knowing fully well that there is a need to promote an open economy. We are very clear about it. But we also want to flag that there are unintended consequences. So I think there's a fine line where there's a sweet spot where there's the balance between where openness begins to destroy the very essence of development of the travel market. And this is where we ask the policymakers to consider these trade-offs. The second question that was raised around fleet strategy. The current plan assumes the current fleet, knowing fully well that in the long run it's going to be inefficient, especially when the price of oil moves. Obviously, well, we're going to retune the network to make sure our aircraft fly more hours than they do today compared to benchmark. We fly 11 hours on average per day. That is on average per month. So the aircraft is 11 hours per day that we're flying compared to the benchmark, which is around about 15 hours. It talks to where we are in terms of geography, but also the fact that our aircraft goes to London and spends 12 hours without the ability to do other things. That costs money. So how we retune the network to make sure that we get different slots,
to be able to optimize the flight time of the aircraft to improve overall efficiency. That's what Peter Davis is working on as the chief restructuring officer. When we do the retuning of the network and the fleet strategy, we have to develop the funding framework for that fleet that keeps the same architecture of the long-range plan, the five-year plan. It keeps the same flight plan, same architecture. It may mean that the overall numbers shift in terms of revenue and cost, depending what whether you lease or you finance it. But our view is that when we retune the fleet, the network and the fleet, we should keep the same architecture of the business plan. So that will come through in September. We're going to do the, we're busy now modeling with the modern network design tools. In September, we'll come up with a refined flight plan. But our commitment is to keep the same architecture of the business plan. So not to change the numbers we have, where that is the break-even year because we've retuned the network. But the values may look slightly differently, but the overall architecture of the plan will remain intact, and that's what we're committing to do. The other question, Chair, that was raised was, we have presented only one option, the strategic recovery. Have you considered all other options? I think the Deputy Finance Minister did indicate that options around liquidation of SA Business Rescue have been looked into, and they are not the option. The only option we have chosen, the shoulder, is strategic recovery. I must say, Chair, that many commentators raise this thing of business rescue. There are specific contracts that are in SAA that, if you were to trigger a business rescue, would be very catastrophic and wide-ranging, to not only to SAA but to the sovereign. That is why our view was that the strategic recovery is the only route. The work we are doing is no different to the work that a business rescue practitioner would do, save perhaps the fact that he probably or she would not have to go to Parliament. He would be given the freedom to do things faster. So these are the kind of things the board has had to consider around SAA. Because often many competitors are calling for this, and I think we want to invite them to talk to us so that we can show them the context within which we operate so that they can appreciate. Chair, the question was, if you get the cash injection now, what is the future outlook for SAA? The cash injection we're asking for is underpinned by a five-year plan with a break-even point in 2021, which means that if we get the cash, the enablement, the resources to implement, SAA beyond 2021 should be able to cover its own costs into the future. I raise this particularly flagging also the fact that there are other environmental factors. There's a certain assumption around price of oil. If price of oil overshoots, goes to $100 a barrel, that's not in the business plan that we put in. So these are the kind of risks that are there. But these are not SA risks only. They are risks for other airlines and so on. So it's important, shareholder, to understand the environment within which we operate. When we account to the shareholder and to the board, these things will be surfaced to say there's a movement in the macro risk that we are dealing with. There was a question around the interim resources. What do you mean? Are we headhunting? We're using a mixed model of recruiting, normal advertisement, putting headhunters for executives, but the interim resources are, for example, in the legal environment, we're recruiting for head of legal services. In the interim, we've had to go and find through a person who can plug that gap, well-renowned advocate of the High Court to come and work for us for a period of time to close the gap, highly skilled. What's our recruiting? So this is the gap filler, so that we don't suffer whilst we're trying to find the perfect candidate who's prepared to come and work for SAA for longer. So that is a mix of recruitment models we're using. A restricted funds that were asked, how much are these restricted funds? These are funds that are restricted in some of the countries because of their foreign currency constraints. In Angola, we have 41, up to April the 20th, with $41.8 million that are held in Angola. In Nigeria, it's about 5.3. In Zimbabwe, it's about 43.5. Overall, money held in outside the country where we need to repatriate is about $90.6 million US dollars. That was the question that was asked. Going towards, and then the question around Airlink franchise, Airlink dominating. Elite and SA Express are franchise partners for SAA. What they do, they help as a feeder into the thin route. Now, because the smaller airports where there is not, I can't carry a 120-seater minimum or 157 profitable, we use the SA Express franchise model, Airlink franchise model, to be a gap filler in that environment. The difference, though, is that SA Express has not been prolific in execution as SA Airlink is. Now, Airlink has been doing a great job. They've been efficient, quick to move, and therefore with good quality of service in terms of on-time performance. Airlink today, we have with SA Express today, we've got a different challenge. So this is about execution. Would I want to have access to a different metal within SA to be able to compete and win? Absolutely. Do I have today? I don't have it. So, Chair, overall, the Airlink relationship is purely based on collaboration and the fact that they can execute. Where we are pulling back from, for example, in terms of the Central Africa, Airlink and SA Express, they are booked onto the SA engine. Now, in the face of the customer, it's SAA, which means, therefore, that even when I want to go back to that market, it's easy, I haven't lost brand equity. Once I get better organized, I get the right metal to go in there, I can go in there with fully fledged SAA stable kind of metal because I'm not losing share. Customers are still using SAA front end, flysaa.com, but I'm carrying them to SAA Express and Airlink. It's just that SAA Express is not at the same level of implementation of operational customer engagement as SAA Airlink. I experience this every day because customers call me for both Airlink and SAA Express when things go wrong. So it's a franchise model based on commercial. They are closing the gaps where we cannot fulfill as SAA because we don't have the right metal. The Miami office that was raised, we are reviewing. The big thing is around what is seen as call centers across the globe. We have already developed the integrated service model, service architecture for support for a omni-channel environment. We reviewed that presentation at EXCO 2 weeks ago. That is going to be the basis where we integrate all services so that we are able to repatriate some of the services where it makes sense to do so back to the country without sacrificing customer experience in the Miami domain. I must say, even though it may not be optimal, when we had Ice Storm in New York, the presence in Miami kicked in for us very, very well in terms of customer support because that was very difficult to engage. It doesn't mean, though, we should run a call center offshore. It does mean that presence in areas which are proximity to support us needs to be, we need to maintain. So we're reviewing this very, very carefully because costs are real, integrated service is a practical thing to do. Absolute money amount that we asked for, that I was asked to be unequivocal, I think the Honourable Pimba said this. SA has a 9.2 billion rand debt that exists today. At the same time, our plan says 12.5 billion rand over the next 3 years to break even. Then if you combine the two, then we are talking 21.7 billion rand. Settle the debt of 9.2, settle the path to success using the for working capital requirements until we do go to the break even point. Chair, I have attempted to cover most of the question. I hope I haven't left. The question is then that you, if the chair raised around timelines, I want to ask that we revert those with the very pointed timelines because, for example, in procurement, the starting point was to put in a chief procurement officer. We're in the final stage, but we brought in Kenneth Pillay, who was in Treasury, to step in as a head of acting head of procurement. The starting is that turnaround has already started, reviewing supply chain management policy, going to start to every other area, pulling the team together to make things work. I would want to come with a much more succinct, more other levels beyond the CPO in terms of what we're doing in finance. We've already brought in consulting support to help finance deal with the audit issues. The consultants are already on the ground at SA today. I would rather want to come with just a summary with the timelines and activities to revert back to the chair.
If it's permissible.
I think I have tried to cover, Chair, unless I've skipped any of the questions.
Okay. Your eyes say something.
Yes, if I could just, in terms of the question on the guarantees, and when you consider how much can continue in terms of providing guarantees to SAA, one also needs to look at what the implication would be for the sovereign. And so, given the extent of the exposure that already exists, for state-owned companies generally, it is a function of the quantity as well as the risk adjusted. Because if it's a low risk, then you can have, you will have appetite for more exposure. But if it's high risk, you don't have appetite for more exposure. And so the response and the downgrade that we've been getting from the rating agencies partly has also been just a result of the size and the risk associated with the size. And so what we are also doing, and what the Deputy Minister was referring to, was looking at a framework where we could help and in fact reduce the size of our guarantee. On the one hand, you want to link it to KPEX, and on the other hand, you also, when you look at the sovereignty of government, you want to separate the debt from the contingent liability. Of course, we look at debt plus contingent liabilities as a percent of GDP, and we say that it is stabilizing at around 55%. So you want to know what your size ought to be for contingent liabilities separate from the debt, and you want to do that quantification. And you shouldn't also have an automatic rollover of existing facilities. And so when a facility mature, you don't want that to automatically be rolled over with a guarantee. So those are this is the type of framework that we want to introduce. I thought that was important. Just on the point that you're making about loss-making rules, there we have, either you could say there's an argue for a mandate that may be developmental and therefore loss-making as a result of a developmental mandate. And so what we have agreed and what Parliament and Cabinet has agreed to was in fact a framework where you should be costing the developmental mandate. I don't say costing the loss-making, but costing the developmental mandate, and then understand that you'll be able to manage it, performance manage the loss-making for the developmental mandate a lot better. I thought those were important points that needed to be made. Thank you, Chair.
Fellow National Treasury, Eddie. Chair, so you also want to say something? As long as you can be short and to the point, we really are running out of time.
Yeah, no, look, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. There was one question that was not responded to by the CEO, which refers to the oversight committee as to who are the members of this committee. The two chairpersons, which is the deputy minister, and Mr. Martin Kingston, who is the chairman of the Finance and Investment Committee at SAA. Then the SAA board representatives is myself as the chairman of the board, the deputy chairman of the board, the liquidity committee, which is the CEO, CFO, COO, treasury, and the change half representatives. From National Treasury, you have the chief director, the director of transport, which is Mr. Abeshia, and then the deputy director general, and then other people who may attending the office, some members of the board and the treasury.
Just to add on, the chairperson of the long-term turnaround strategy, Uswazi, is a part of the committee. Akhta is part of the committee. He chairs the risk and audit and risk committee. The deputy chairperson, the chairperson, and the chair of finance are the five members of the board focusing on liquidity management. They are members of the oversight committee, matched by the DM and the technical team of treasury to form the oversight committee.
Well, thank you so much for this. Indeed, at least it's going to be robust, and it has been robust. We really would like to thank you, honourable members. I really am pressed for time. So, let me reiterate that I can see that you really are sending new questions. And then may I appeal to members to forward those questions through the secretariat so that we can then re-forward those questions to the CFO, and then who will then provide us with written responses.
But also, you know that some of the questions you can forward to both the minister and the deputy minister for both oral and written responses. But I'm trying to show you the channels that we still have beyond this. So thank you so much for your understanding. We are going to release SAA. The chairperson, the CEO, and the team. We wish to thank you for your full and comprehensive briefing to really share with the members very openly and frankly progress and insights, including challenges on your long-term turnaround strategy, which is, if I heard you correctly, 5 years, and then with that, the 3 years break even moving forward. Of course, for all this to happen, you need funding. Okay? All right. We truly appreciate this information and this engagement and your frankness in engaging with us, because we can only work based on accurate information. And it's not me saying this. It is the Constitution that you must give us accurate information, and also that information must come timely. So, which means we don't have the lapse of time. That's why we'll be calling in time and again, just to check on where are you now until you are out of this situation. And what is important is that the minister has reassured us about the quality leadership, both at the CEO management level and also at the board level. So we depend on you to take us out on this one. We have actually created even more expectations. So now we know. I'm sure you have noted the concerns of the members and kindly embedded in these, in the entire, I'm sorry, kindly embedded in the entire SAA executive and organization. Again, good governance and firm execution are critical. And creating a balance between your performance and, I repeat this one, performance and compliance. Please, you need that one. Remember, it's also about the image and creation of trust, respect and trust from your constituents, which is the whole of South Africa and global, because we are, unfortunately, we are operating global. So that trust and respect is highly needed so that you can fly very high, you know, once you're off stage, this problematic stage. All right. We will continue monitoring SAA very closely. That's our contract. We've agreed on this from the very first meeting. And you agreed. Thank you very much. And then we haven't changed. National Treasury is here, and we hope you noted all the points that National Treasury made. And would also like to thank Mr. Moon. So he, who was invited by us, so that he can continue to expand our knowledge base, so that in our engagement with you, we do it from an informed position. And not just that, but we make an impact. Impact is what we want to see. Because it will not help us to sit here and waste money, we travel all the way to waste. It will be a wasted expense, fruitless expense. You want to avoid that, and as we lead by example. So that's why we really want to be knowledgeable, and we then thought we must not be selfish. As they empower us with more knowledge, or they pump us with more knowledge, so that we can also hear what is it that they are pumping us with. And then you take what will be in your best interest and use it. Much thanks to the board and to the CEO and the entire SAA delegation, and to Mr. Mutsuki. We also release Mr. Mutsuki. We have another engagement. That's why actually so pushing, and you can see I was actually in trouble with my right hand side paper. I had to push so you can allow another presentation to come through. Thank you so much. We really appreciate and value your time.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you.